loves college hoops and talking tribe. Like Shefty and Secret Squirrel, he's a two-phone guy. If you're looking to start a bowling league, he already has a team. The editor of all our fantasy. He's Not Cool Keith, Not Cool Keith. He rarely speaks on the pod, but Not Cool Keith, Not Cool Keith, Not Cool Keith lifts and rocks.
Hey, the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Go to geico.com today. And welcome into another edition of the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. The band is back together, and I'm not talking about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I'm instead talking about Stefania Bell. How are you?
I'm good, Field. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. And Matthew Berry, TMR, is also back. We missed you both last week, but Mike Clay did an admirable job filling in. What's going on, bud?
Well, Mike Clay always does a great job, so I'm not surprised to hear that. And I'm trying to decide that with me and Stefania joining the, coming back this week to the Fantasy Focus, Stefania, what do you think? What show is it? Who's older, us or the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? as Field references, I mean, like, you know,
it's a toss up.
I mean, it's close.
I mean, to be very clear. Tom Brady is getting his AARP letters already too.
Right, 1,000%.
To be clear, by the way, age is very much just a number, and Stefania and Matthew are illustrations of that, right? Stefania has the glow of a 25-year-old. Matthew has the. You know what? I'm going to stop before I say something that I regret. Yeah.
The glow of a 70-year-old. Tom Brady won a Super Bowl. So I agree with you that age is just a number.
All right. So on today's show,
we have semi-breaking news into the podcast here, Field Yates, and I feel like we should discuss it.
I know. You want to take a moment to discuss this, that Jordan Reed, the tight end for a long time, the Washington football team, and then most recently for the San Francisco 49ers, has decided to retire. Stefania, I think you have both a lot of information on Jordan Reed, a lot of admiration as well. He played through a lot, but part of the reason why we talked about him a lot is because he played through so many injuries. This is a player, though, that at his best. Go ahead, Matthew. What do you want to say about Jordan
Reed? All I was going to say is just to set up Stefania one more second, is just that, like, I don't know. And Stefan, you can answer this, but I don't know that there's a player Stefan and I have worked together pretty much every day of our lives for the last 14 years. And I don't think there is a player that I've heard Stefania discuss more over those 14 years than Jordan Reed, because he was such a tantalizing talent, but obviously had so many issues staying on the field. So every year and every preseason, can he stay healthy? How's his health? What's going on? So Field, you and I decided before the show that we thought, Stefania, for the very last time in your life, hopefully, we'd like you to discuss Jordan Reed.
I sigh. You know, it's a toss-up between Jordan Reed and Alshon Jeffrey as to who's gotten more airtime. But I think Jordan Reed wins out because, obviously, the tight end position, there has been more scarcity for top-level talent. And Jordan Reed, clearly, a top-level talent, and as you said, Matthew, the question every year, seems like every time we came around to draft times, how are we going to rank Jordan Reed? Because we know what he can do when he's on the field, but we just never know if he's going to be on the field. And if you look back at the litany of injuries that he had, certainly concussion injuries were something that really started near the front end of his career. He ended up on IR to close out one season because of issues following multiple concussions. And then in the last couple of years, it's been more of the other soft tissue injuries. He had a foot injury that was problematic for really an entire season when he was with Washington. And then he's had shoulder injuries. You know, big physical guy. There was actually an article written about him and other tight ends, but he sort of led the way. And I can't remember where it was published off the top of my head, but it was talking about the evolution of tight ends in the NFL to becoming these hybrid players who needed to be big and strong and physical blocking tight ends, but also quick and nimble pass catching tight ends. And that maybe that goal of trying to hybridize this position was leading to all the injuries that we were seeing. And Jordan Reed was sort of the poster child for that. I feel badly because his legacy should be more than his injury, But it's only fitting if I'm talking about him that we focus on that. And it seems only fitting then that his final season would be with San Francisco in a year where virtually every 49er ended up on the injured list at some point and missed games. Jordan Reed actually filled in when George Kittle was hurt. So we need George Kittle back healthy. But as we roll into, obviously, we're leading up to the NFL draft. The other side of this news about Jordan Reed is that San Francisco 49ers now are going to be looking for a tight end.
Matthew, what are your sort of lasting images of Jordan Reed, who, of course, I mentioned prior to his stop in San Francisco, was a longtime Washington football team tight end by the way, of New London, Connecticut, one of our own here in the Nutmeg State, Jordan Reed.
Yeah, Jordan Reed was one of my favorite players, one of my favorite Washington players, just one of my favorite players of all time. Like, to Stefania's point, like, he was one of those first, like, truly offensive tight ends, not to take anything away from, like, the Tony Gonzalez's or the Antonio Gates of the world, but, like, to Stefania's point, like, he was a different breed of tight end in terms of, like, basically a wide receiver masquerading as a tight end, and he was always a disaster for defensive coordinators to try to match up with. He was a great, you know, he was a matchup nightmare for any defensive coordinator. And, you know, what's a shame about him is obviously the injuries, but more importantly is that he's like, he got that tag of like always being injured. And the truth is that he's a tough guy. I mean, like, I remember that, I want to say it's a week 15 or a week 16 game a handful of years ago. I want to say it was Dallas that he was playing against. And, like, he left the game. We got, I think it was a shot in the back and just looked awful. And
I know what you're talking about.
He's
I think
done.
It was when he separated his shoulder. I think he separated his shoulder. Yes. He had an AC sprain and he came back in and made like one-handed catches and scored touchdowns. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, he scored two touchdowns in that game. And second, I mean, like, anyway, like, just super, super tough. But I remember just in terms of the fabric of our show, and then we can move on. But just, I also remember the fabric of our show was that, I think what we've done, if I can be serious for 1 second here, one thing that I think our show has done really well, and all credit goes to Stefania on this, is I think we've done a good job of helping educate the public about the seriousness of concussions and the complexity of that injury. And so, and I feel like Jordan Reed, because of his high profile nature in the fantasy football world, and because he suffered so many of them, he was sort of a catalyst or a vehicle for us to be able to discuss that. And like, we purposely made jokes about, well, is it a mild concussion or is it serious? Like, what's the, you know, and Stefania would always correct us, but that was always a way to like, try to, you know, tell the public like, hey, no, these are as, you know, I think of all the phrases I've learned from Stefania over the years, which is like, concussions are a nonlinear injury and there is no such thing as a mild concussion. And just, you know, and I always just feel like because of his career that we were able to, or really Stefania was able to educate the public about concussions. I hear that a lot from fans that, you know, you see it whenever a player has a concussion and you'll see some commentator make some dumb, like, oh, it's probably just a mild concussion. You see all the 060 owner nation go, no such thing. Or they tag Stefania on Twitter and it's, you know, not that concussions are great to see, but it is, I do think that's important because I don't think there's still a lot to be learned about about CTE and concussions and football players. And I like to think that our little show, thanks to Stefania, has done our part to help educate on that topic.
Stefania, any final closing thoughts before we move on to some players entering their second NFL season?
No, thank you, Matthew. But I hope that's my goal is to do a little bit of education along the way. So with that, let's roll.
All right. Let's talk about it.
Much respect to 86. Much respect, Jordan Reed.
Really quickly want to say this. I love that Matthew said, over my time with Stefania, which is what, like 12 years, he's learned two things, and then it's the concussions are not linear, and there's no such thing as a mild concussion. I love it. That's exactly what I would expect.
I've learned more than two things from Stefania.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You've learned at least three things, yeah.
I've got to play back the tape on that one, Matthew.
No, listen, my I'm much better at selecting wine now, thanks to Stefania.
So that's an important skill for a married man like yourself, Matthew Berry.
I mean, I got three things over 12 years, which Listen by the forward. Way, by the way, Daniel, you and I have worked together for like seven and I'm at zero. I haven't learned any.
By the way, it's 13 years.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. Yeah. 13.
Time flies when you're having fun is the real lesson here. So let's move on to the players that are now entering their second season in the NFL. So we're 9 days away from the 2021 NFL draft, which has us thinking, of course, about the 2020 NFL draft. So what we're going to do is breeze through some of the players that were rookies last year, talk about their performance, and then sort of their expectations going forward, play a little ping pong, go back and forth on some of these names. Matthew, we're going to start with quarterbacks. So I'll begin with the star of the 2020 NFL rookie quarterback class, Justin Herbert for the Chargers, had a monster year last year, was incredible, 22.2 fantasy points per game. Can he keep it up going into next season?
I think he can. Like, but here's my question back to you, Field. Do you want to frame this as what we think they're going to do next, but or more about, like, because here we are in the pre-draft process, and there's been so much talk about where's Mac Jones going to go? Where's Justin Fields going to go? You know, Trey Lance, et cetera, et cetera. And is it better to illustrate sort of like where we think these guys were a year ago? Meaning like when Justin Herbert was drafted, I sort of shrugged my shoulders. And I understand. And shrugged my shoulders, meaning that like, listen, he was obviously like he was a first round pick. And I think he went seventh overall. Field, you'd know that.
Sixth overall.
But I mean, like, because the Chargers kept saying Tyrod Taylor's their starter, and Anthony Lynn obviously had familiarity with Tyrod from their time in Buffalo. And so you sort of thought, okay, well, we believe it. And listen, first round picks usually get in, but we didn't expect, and I don't mean to make fun of it because it's awful, but like, we didn't expect Tyrod Taylor to get injured by the actual Chargers team doctor when he punctured his lung, giving him a shot. And so Herbert all of a sudden got what we thought was going to be a spot start against the Chiefs and then just absolutely balled out. But I think at this point last year, and it's illustrative of what we're going to get into this entire show, is it's like, you know, like best laid plans, right? Like no one would have thought Justin Herbert would have been the second best quarterback on a per game basis from week 7 to 11, which is what he was. He had a stretch there from week 7 to 11 where he was just absolutely dominant. And, you know, so that was just very surprising. To answer your question, though, do I think he can keep it up? I do. I know there's a new coaching staff in Los Angeles, but what gave Justin Herbert his success? Like you just watch the game and you're like, okay, that kid can play. He's just an absolute baller. And by the way, you look at, you know, Keenan Allen and Mike Williams and Austin Eckler out of the backfield, like they have some weapons for him. I'm sure they'll add more. So I do think, you know, I think he's a, you know, he's a QB1 for me. I am at QB9. You know, I think the book will be out on him a little bit. Field, you're a little bit more optimistic than me, but, you know, kid can play.
Yeah, no doubt he can play. And I would say that after a certain few quarterbacks at the very top of the fantasy rankings, like I kind of view 5 through 6 or 7, 8, maybe even 9 as interchangeable. I think the case for Justin Herbert's pretty obvious. The guy did amazing things with 6 minutes of preparation. There's that great story of Hunter Henry, then with the Chargers, who when Justin Herbert took the field as the starting quarterback against the Chiefs and went into the huddle, Hunter Henry said, "What are you doing here?" Right. So that's how much of a surprise it was that Justin Herbert was the starting quarterback on that day. The case against Justin Herbert is probably twofold. And this is nitpicking. One would just be that there's so many good quarterbacks that like he could have a really great year and you could have 7 others that have an even greater year. And then two is, and this is one of those double-edged swords, second time going through the batting order, so to speak, right? Like last year, the book wasn't out on Justin Herbert. Last year, he was playing off of instinct and just energy and momentum. This year, teams have a bit more of a book to scout on him. At the same time, he's got all that experience under his belt. So I'm not going to move my needle too much on Justin Herbert based off of the fact that teams have a little bit more scouting ability on him. But let's move forward to the next player, Joe Burrow.
The argument, I'd say, The only thing I would add to that in terms of a negative, and I agree with you, we're nitpicking, but at the top, you sort of do have to nitpick here, which is the fact that while he is mobile, he doesn't have the rushing upside of a Josh Allen, of a Kyler Murray. You know what I mean? Like he's definitely, you know, pretty mobile, right? You know what I mean? But he's not, you know, there's a level above him in terms of the rushing ability. I mean, again, you think about Lamar Jackson, right? You think about Lamar Jackson coming off of 2019 and just the greatest fantasy season of all time ever.
Yeah.
And there was a book out on Lamar Jackson, right? You know, I mean, and Lamar Jackson had a disappointing year in 2020 compared to what we saw in 2019. Sure. So that, you know, that's the only argument, but you and I are both on the same page here. He's a top 10 fantasy quarterback next year. Not last year was not a fluke. Kid's an absolute baller and will be again this year.
So Justin Herbert was the third quarterback taken in last year's draft. The first one was, of course, Joe Burrow. Stefania went first overall. The Bengals. The Bengals unveiled their uniforms on Monday, and I don't know when the promotional video was taped for those jersey reveals, but it was hard not to catch sight of one of the photos that kind of went viral yesterday on the internet. Joe Burrow, who, of course, as we know, had a major knee injury. I mean, there is a massive, massive scar down his knee. It looks like it's about 6 inches. It's not super zoomed in, but we know this is a significant injury that he is coming back from. How confident are you that by the time the season starts, Joe Burrow should be back to full Voltron?
In April, not totally. And despite all the positive that Joe Burrow is speaking, and he has indicated that he believes he's on track for week one, and he most likely is on track for week one as of now. But I would remind people that this is a significant multi-ligament knee injury. His surgery was December 2nd. It was his left knee, so his front knee in the pocket. ACL, MCL is the official report. But we know that at the time of his injury and surgery, Adam Schefter reported there was also PCL and medial meniscus involvement. So a complicated case. The critical elements really happen in sort of the first 4 to 6 months in terms of really getting your strength back. Joe Burrow was in Los Angeles initially for his rehab after having surgery out there with Dr. Neil Elitrosh, then went back to Cincinnati and has been working out there, doing his rehab in Cincinnati, at least for now. I think for me, it's going to be hard to judge until I see him move, until we see what he looks like when training camps open. You know, who knows with all these teams that are talking about doing virtual workouts in the spring, I don't think we're going to get a good look at players. So unless Joe Burrow is working out publicly and there's video, we start to see some of what he's doing. Right now, we're just taking someone's word for it off a complex knee injury. And I would take you back to Carson Wentz, who, different injury, but a multi-ligament knee injury, had surgery later in the season. And was not quite ready at week one and took a little bit. You know, it's one thing to be ready and cleared to return to play. It's another to be really back to form and being number one, not only as mobile and athletic as you were pre-injury, but also getting over the apprehension of this potentially happening again, which is not an insignificant component of coming back.
You know, the pros for Joe Burrow last year, beyond the fact he's a good talent, obviously, the guy went first overall for a reason, but volume really helped him out last season. At one point, he was averaging like 40 passing attempts per game, maybe even more at certain stretches of the season before he got hurt. The defense was just so woeful in Cincinnati. They had no choice but to do that. So I don't look at the reinforcements they made this year on defense and think they're going to be that much better, Matthew. I will just say this, is that the Bengals are picking fifth. And I think from a fantasy standpoint, as weird as this may sound, whether they take a left tackle or a pass catcher, both of them have comparable value to help Joe Burrow. Because if you can't protect him, I don't care who you're throwing to, it could get ugly in a hurry. But if you do take Ja'Marr Chase, then all of a sudden you have one of the most exciting young wide receiver groups in the NFL.
Yeah, it's a really interesting debate because I can make the argument for both ways, right? And I'm sure you guys have been talking about this on First Draft quite a bit. Whether they take the left tackle, right, and protect him and then, you know, get a wide receiver in the second round, or do they take Ja'Marr Chase? Most people seem to think this draft is pretty deep in terms of offensive line talent. Then you get somebody in the second round. It's interesting to see. But what I will say is that, look, the things that I don't think that changes. I mean, I think the question on Burrow is really health. Right. And, you know, Stefania just talked about it. We just won't know. But I absolutely love T. Higgins. Tyler Boyd is obviously awesome. And I think they will get somebody to replace AJ. I mean, right now they have Auden Tate, who actually, I think Auden Tate's a nice little player. Like, you know, and I think they wouldn't be completely screwed if he's their third. But I think they would feel comfortable if Auden Tate was more their fourth, the role that he excelled in last year, and they had somebody to replace A.J. Green on the opposite side of T. Higgins. But look, insane volume, second year in the league, even though he missed a decent chunk of it with the injury. But, you know, to me, the bigger question here is, will his injury, if he's fully recovered, assuming he's starting, does that affect his rushing at all? Because that's the biggest thing with any fantasy quarterback these days, Field, because there are so many that give you points with their rushing, right? Is Kenny, and like, again, Joe Burrow's not like, again, he's not Kyler Murray, he's not Lamar Jackson, he's not Josh Allen, but he is mobile enough to get you, you know, 250 yards over the course of a season, right? He gets you, he's like, he's, you know, 20 yards a game kind of thing. Somewhere between, you know, and Justin Herbert's like, I think in the middle there, but I don't know. Like for me, is his injury, like, is he going to be embraced or anything like that? Will that affect his rushing? But
by the way, a lot of these, you can expect him to be in a brace front leg after a blowout.
Maybe for the rest of his career.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so.
I know, I hear you, Matthew. Let's just keep moving here on these quarterbacks though, just in the interest of the time.
Is what he is.
Yeah. I agree there. I'll just quickly handle Tua Tagovailoa because none of us have him ranked inside our top 20, the fifth overall pick last year, but he had just 1 week inside the top 15 in this position when he did start for the Dolphins. The case for Tua is that teams expect players to make their biggest leap in his career between his first and second season. The weapons should be very good if they take Ja'Marr Chase or Kyle Pitts at pick six overall, which is 9 days from the time that we are recording this podcast. If they do that, you factor in the addition of Will Fuller. You factor in a potentially better offensive line as well. The Dolphins do own the 18th pick in the first round. So the Dolphins offense could be much better. We could see a leap from Tua, but because of the quarterback depth, that's why he falls where he does. And then just to wrap up quarterbacks, Matthew, Jalen Hurts, you've been talking about him a ton. So we don't need to belabor it, but as things presently stand, he has a clear path to the Eagles starting quarterback job. And as you have said many times over, he is a quarterback love, a player you think could boom in a major way in 2021.
I mean, look at his first four games as a rookie compared with the final four games of Lamar Jackson's rookie season, and they compare favorably. Again, like, I mean, I've been saying this not just in this podcast, but I've been saying this for years. I mean, something, if you go back to my draft day manifesto from last year, we talked about the fact that going into last year, I want to say eight of the previous top 10 fantasy quarterbacks, you know, had at least, I want to say 300 yards rushing in a season, might be 250. I don't have the stat memorized, but the fact is that there are so many mobile quarterbacks in today's NFL that if your starting quarterback in fantasy doesn't get you points with his legs, then, you know, it needs to be somebody that's literally dropping back and can throw 40 plus touchdowns and, you know, 4,500 yards, right? It needs to be peak Drew Brees. It needs to be, you know, somebody like Tom Brady that's going to just, you know, throw and get you some cheap touchdowns when they get in close. But so Jalen Hurts, to me, I'm just a believer in the talent. And I know the argument is that, well, he only completed 56% of his passes. Like, his accuracy is awful. Go look at Josh Allen's, you know, accuracy his rookie year. Go look at Lamar Jackson's accuracy his rookie year. What?
Yeah. No, I always think it's funny. Like, we, you know, we can cherry pick extremes, right? Like, you know, I'm just saying, I get it. More, you know, I don't think you needed to defend the accuracy. More just point to the fact that even without great accuracy, he had a monster start to his NFL career as far as fantasy is concerned.
Yeah, no, I'm completely cherry picking, but, you know, that's what you're doing, right? I mean, and so I always cherry pick. So, and I think every fantasy analyst does, by the way, because there's just not enough time. That's the premise of my 100 facts column that I do every year is about cherry picking. But to your point, Field, last year with a completion percentage that was brutal and, you know, an offense falling apart around him, a coaching staff that was in turmoil and a lot of injuries on the offensive, you know, in terms of the offensive skill positions, Jalen Hurts was still a top nine fantasy quarterback over the final four games on a points per game basis and total points. I'm all in on Jalen Hurts this year.
Last thing I'll say,
assuming the Eagles don't draft a quarterback at 12, which I can't imagine they will, but you never know.
Last thing I'll say, and only because we were just talking about him and that massive scar that was on his knee, Joe Burrow just took to Instagram himself and posted a photo of himself sitting in kind of a Bengals throne, and where the scar was quite visible. And he quoted his caption, and Joe Burrow, undisputed number one overall pick in terms of Instagram captions. "If I died without scars, that just means I did nothing worth fighting for." So that tells you how Joe Burrow feels about that scar on his knee. Not a big deal in his estimation. We're talking about running backs in just a second. But before we do that,
venture to say he'd rather not have it, but oh, that's just me.
Probably fair. This is a word from our friends who helped make this podcast possible at Geico. Because do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. Seriously, I'm 5 months in, and it's still hard work for us. But you know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. All right, we're going to move through these running backs at a brisker pace, as if we are running like one of the great draft prospects doing his 40 time at Pro Days, which seemed to be very fast this year. We've also talked about these players a lot, so I'm going to pass it around to each of us. Matthew, you get the first shot at a running back. It's James Robinson. We've talked about him many times over. Whether he can meet last year's production is one question, but I think we all feel like this player is still bound for a good fantasy value again this year.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I'm at running back 16 in my initial ranks pre-draft. We'll see what Jacksonville does. I think them signing Carlos Hyde actually helps James Robinson because you're not really concerned about Carlos Hyde taking significant work away from him, but he will take some work away from him. And that's important just because, listen, one of the things that was in James Robinson's favor last year was insane volume. Like, he never came off the field. He played almost every snap. He's a true three down back. I expect Jacksonville to be better with presumably Trevor Lawrence under center and brand new coaching staff, Urban Meyer and Darrell Bevell. But so James Robinson, listen, I think he can play, but I actually have him lower than he was last year. He was a top five fantasy running back last year. I'm at 16 this year because, again, I think Book will be out on him a little bit. I think Jacksonville will have more weapons. He won't be like the only guy in town. And I don't think he gets, I think he gets a significant workload. I don't think he gets the insane volume he got last season.
Matt Stefania, Jonathan Taylor for the Colts is part of a busy and crowded backfield. Naheem Hines plus the recently re-signed Marlon Mack. Do you think that Jonathan Taylor can hold that RB1 job down to himself in Indy this year?
I think he can. I think he established himself as the clear feature back in Indy. And I know we were all nervous at the start of the season about what was going to happen, who was going to get the workload. And even sometimes week to week, Naheem Hines would sort of explode with a lot of volume. But I think as the season wore on, we saw Jonathan Taylor really emerge as the feature back for Indy. They have a great offensive line, which can only help him. Marlon Mack, as you pointed out, they just re-signed him, but he's coming off an Achilles rupture, which certainly guys are coming back from those now differently than they did before, but it's not exactly the thing that makes you worry about him being a threat to Jonathan Taylor. I think this only helps his cause. And, you see a guy in Taylor who actually finished up, he finished strong as the season wore on. And so I feel good about him going into next year. Versatile enough. I think he's got the lead to himself.
And next up is DeAndre Swift for the Lions, who, speaking of a guy who finished strong, he had 16 touches per game between weeks 9 through 17 last season. That was nearly twice as many as his 9.1 touches per game in weeks 1 through 8. It's an offense that is now coordinated by Anthony Lynn, who we know is a fan of running the football. Dan Campbell, the new head coach, has talked about sort of a glass-eating mentality. You expect them to be a team that's going to try to be physical up front. So we think that running the football will be a priority in Detroit. Look at the competition for carries right now. Jamal Williams was signed to a two-year deal from Green Bay. I believe it was $7.5 million. And Kerryon Johnson has a year left on his contract. But it feels like this is DeAndre Swift's job, a really talented player, a guy who obviously can impact the passing game as well. And the only concern I have with DeAndre Swift, who cracked all of our top 13 in terms of running backs, is simply that if Detroit really, really struggles this year and they're constantly and perpetually playing from behind all the time, could it be that Jamal Williams winds up being a great value and DeAndre Swift ends up being the opposite of that? Matthew, your Washington football team offense has become fun all of a sudden, in part because of the addition of Ryan Fitzpatrick. But not to be overlooked is that Antonio Gibson, who hit his stride last season, returns healthy after being out late last year.
Yeah, I have Antonio Gibson at 15. I think he's going to have – listen, I think he's going to be a great year. Last year, Antonio Gibson, you know, he didn't have a huge profile in college. Like, the measurables jumped off the page, but there was concern about his lack of experience in college. But they loved his versatility. They loved the measurables. They loved the tape that they did see. And, look, he proved everything that he needed to and more last season, right? Had 8 different games with 3 or more catches. Obviously they towards the end of the season, they started using him on the goal line. And again, like, all due respect to, speaking of much respect to Alex Smith, who just announced his retirement yesterday. Much respect to him. Again, if you haven't watched Project 11 that Stefania did with the E60 team, highly recommended. It's on demand. Go find it. It's amazing to see Alex's comeback. But, you know, with all due respect, it wasn't a dynamic offense last year, whether it was Alex Smith or Kyle Allen or Dwayne Haskins under center. Fitzpatrick gives them a real quarterback that I believe their offense will be more dynamic, especially the addition of Curtis Samuel as well. So I think they'll be in scoring position more often. They've shown that they're not scared to use Gibson as a goal line back. I think, look, I have him at 15 and I might be too low on him. The only knock on Gibson right now, and, you know, like, there's not a lot of competition. You've got J.D. McKissic as a third down back. You've got, you know, Peyton Barber, whatever. The only knock on Gibson is that the quarterbacks that he played with previously, especially Allen and Smith, were much more check down artists than Fitzy will be. And so does that, take away a little bit from his passing game usage. But I think he's such a dynamic player and that offense coordinator Scott Turner will find a way to use him. And I just think they're going to be in scoring position a lot more often because, again, Fitzy will drive the ball down the field. So, I think sky's the limit for Antonio Gibson. I have Antonio Gibson in the Dynasty League that we are all in together, and I'm very, very happy about that.
Stefania, moving forward to Clyde Edwards-Helaire, 32nd overall pick last year, the final pick of the first round, a player that many wanted to be a thing going into the season. In terms of disappointments, he was one of the bigger ones of first round fantasy picks last year. Is there a pathway for him to turn this around and be close to the player that we thought he was going to be, maybe like a top 8 or 10 running back last season?
I think the path is unclear. You know, I think last year there was all this hype. I took him in the first round of one of our leagues and it did not serve me well. That was a mistake. And yet, you know, we saw flashes, but I think what I saw, the way I read what happened with Clyde Edwards-Helaire in Kansas City, was they tried to establish him. He had moments where he looked really good. I think it was the Thursday night game where there were like 4 attempts to have him run into the end zone and none of them worked. And I feel like there were adjustments made. Like, this is maybe too much for this kid too soon. And all of a sudden, he wasn't relied on as much. He had one massive week against the Bills in week 6 where he put up 161 rushing yards. But after that, he had 7 more games he played in before getting hurt with his hip injury. And he only posted under 50 yards in all but 2 of those games. So I felt like they just weren't going to rely on him. It was almost like the idea of using multiple backs in their system became the default that we've seen before with Andy Reid. And it was almost like it was too much for Clyde Edwards-Helaire at the beginning, and they scaled back on that. So whether that changes next year or not, I think that remains to be seen. He was in the Super Bowl, he came back and played despite being out with the hip injury at the end of the season. He did come back at that point. But that was a really hard position to evaluate his role because the Chiefs were playing from behind so much that they weren't going to lean on him anyway. So I think it's a little confusing, but certainly compared to where we were ranking him last year, I think we would all agree that that's going to drop this year.
Those include for Clyde Edwards-Helaire that the Chiefs have not added a substantial back to their backfield up to this point, but As we know, last year, part of the huge issue was that when the Chiefs got within the 10-yard line, Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy have about 9,000 different plays that they can run. Very few of them involved Clyde Edwards-Helaire up the gut to score a touchdown. Many more of them were like Travis Kelce throwing it to like the now retired Anthony Sherman or Eric Fisher or something like that. So,
and it feels like part of that was even influenced by the fact that so early on, that was not a strength of his.
That's a good point as well. All right, next one here is J.K. Dobbins went 55th overall to the Ravens, a player that we all thought had a chance to break out last season. Unfortunately, because of the, I would say really, honestly, I can't think of the precise reason. Honestly, I'd say that I was just say the presence of Gus Edwards, it just kind of never happened. And while Mark Ingram is now a Houston Texan and the Ravens have not made a subsequent investment in running backs elsewhere, at least leading into the draft, I got to say I have him 20th, J.K. Dobbins. I still am a little bit nervous only because the NFL or the fans outside of the NFL may not value him in a certain way, but the Ravens love Gus Edwards and he's not going anywhere. And they are a little bit stubborn at times on offense. I think in many reasons, in many cases, they have a right to be stubborn offensively. Like they're going to do what they do. And part of that is handing the football off to Gus Edwards frequently, Matthew. So I've got Dobbins at 20th. I think the upside, if he becomes a full-time feature back, is way greater than that. But he had zero games with more than 15 carries last year. And over the final five games of the season, he had one catch.
Not just that field, but he's got a quarterback that is always a threat to keep it himself. That's the other issue with J.K. Dobbins. Listen, I love J.K. Dobbins. I also have J.K. Dobbins in the Dynasty League that we're all in together. And the concern with him is not just Gus Edwards, because I got to tell you, they like Gus Edwards. He's a thing. But he's also got a quarterback in Lamar Jackson that is obviously always a threat to keep it. And so J.K. Dobbins, I've seen in some early drafts going like in the second round. And I just, that's insane to me. Like, I love his talent. You love his talent. Stefania loves his talent. We all know the upside and the potential, but there's real risk with J.K. Dobbins there that I don't think is there with some other second round players. And it's so interesting. Like, you know, my thought going into the season was like, I'm going to be in on J.K. Dobbins. And now, like, seeing how high he's going, I'm going to be like, I'm actually weirdly not going to be in on J.K. Dobbins, despite the fact I think I have him in every dynasty league except one, like, that I'm in. I mean, like, yeah. Gus Edwards and Lamar Jackson they're going to be things, obviously.
Let's finish this up here. Just note that Zach Moss for the Buffalo Bills. Bills are a team that I think is a trendy potential first or second round running back investing team. Moss does not crack the rankings for any of us. He averaged less than 8 points per game last season. I'm going to flag Zach Moss. If the Bills do nothing in the draft, let's revisit that. But because of the suggestions that the Bills could be in the running back market, might be one to table for right now as we move forward to wide receivers instead. And I don't think we need to spend too much time, Matthew, sort of fretting over what Justin Jefferson can or can't do this upcoming season, because based off last year, the guy deserves any sort of praise and accolades that you can thrust upon him.
I actually would like to focus on what he can't do, because I'm not sure how long a list that is. What can't he do? Is there something?
I don't know. Nothing. No, I mean, nothing but football related I can think of off the top of my head. It's a good point.
I mean, the guy's a monster, and it's unbelievable. And I think Justin Jefferson is – the one point I'll make about Justin Jefferson, I just think this is important, as we talk about pre-draft hype and when we talk about hype of players afterwards. Think about at this point last year, meaning, you know, like a week or so before the draft, Jerry Jeudy was the unquestioned, not, you know, like for people that were in dynasty leagues and still remain, but it's like it's CeeDee Lamb or it's Jerry Jeudy, right? And then obviously Henry Ruggs went very high as well. Like people were not talking about Justin Jefferson in the same breath as those guys, you know, in terms of from a skill standpoint, from a fantasy standpoint. Then he lands in Minnesota and you think, well, maybe there's a chance, but you know, he's going to replace Stephon Diggs, but it's a, you know, so we think there's a chance there, but Liz and Field, I know you said this on the Fantasy Football Marathon. You were talking about that your choice for rookie that had the chance to have the rookie wide receiver that had the chance to have the best fantasy year was Justin Jefferson, but we all had him like in the 40s. And your argument was like, you know, hey, I think they'll use him as a slot guy opposite because he's going to take the Stephon Diggs role and they'll move. They'll move Thielen outside and, you know, they'll mix and match those two guys. No one expected top 10 fantasy wide receiver.
Just an absolute No doubt. Yeah. It's a good reminder that, you know, situation definitely matters. So it's easy for us to say that Ja'Marr Chase will be the number one wide receiver next year in fantasy amongst rookies, but that might feel like a different sentiment if he lands in a less pass-friendly offense and Devontae Smith or Jalen Waddle goes to a place that has a ton of upside. Stefania, Brandon Ayuk was just remarkable for the 49ers last season. Also did so while battling through, believe it or not, because it was the 49ers, a couple different injuries.
Yeah, you know, he played in 12 games, didn't play the first game of the season. And then he stepped in and he, you know, we have this nice note from Kyle, didn't take long to prove himself. Well, week three, he led the team with 8 targets, 5 for 70 and a rushing touchdown. Week three, they needed him because if you recall, in week two, they lost about half their offense to injuries. So Brandon Ayuk had this opportunity and he shined in it. You know, still a bit raw in some places, some drop issues in some places, but you got to remember that offense was never really in sync because they were rotating personnel so much due to the injury and COVID issues, part of which is one of the things that also kept him out of the lineup several times. He ends the year leading the team in targets, ends the season with 750 yards there about and 5 touchdowns. And the other thing that he has, I mean, 33 and a half inch long arms. The guy's catch radius is extraordinary. His wingspan is amazing. So I think he's got the talent to be cemented as one of their top offensive weapons. The problem I have in figuring out how to rank him for next year is just not knowing what the 49ers offense is really fully going to look like, because we did not see all their starters together hardly at all last year.
And of course, as we know, obviously, there is a big decision they have to make at pick 3 when they are going to quarterback. We'll just see which one it is. I'll continue to believe that it's Mac Jones. I want to move forward to CeeDee Lamb. I want to get Daniel involved here because Daniel, unless this is a misprint, has CeeDee Lamb 13th overall amongst wide receivers. Daniel Dobb, how confident are you in that assessment?
So I've been watching a lot Mondays and Fridays. I'm trying to just watch teams all the way through and rewatch the NFL season. And one of the things, I'm on the Cowboys right now, I was just blown away. And 13 might be a little high. After the draft, it may settle down into more of the mid to low teens, but I'm pretty sure it'll still be top 20. CeeDee Lamb with the football in his hands is just explosive. The way he attacks the ball, he's a very aggressive wide receiver with the way that he uses his hands. And I think the idea for me, a rookie wide receiver like him in a shortened offseason to come in right away with Dak Prescott and hit the ground running, I was really impressed by. You look at the idea that he didn't have Dak for the entire season with Andy Dalton. I think Michael Gallup is going to be a distant wide receiver 3 in this offense. And I think Michael Gallup is a good wide receiver, but I think Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb are going to be the two guys that run this show. And I really like, this is sort of me, I guess you could say, planting my flag on the idea that I think CeeDee Lamb takes the biggest step this year from these wide receivers.
There you have it. CeeDee Lamb. Matthew, you want to just get in there for a quick rebuttal or not? Maybe not a rebuttal. Maybe you feel the same way.
I think CeeDee Lamb is super talented and I have him ranked, you know, I have him ranked over Michael Gallup, right? I have Cooper higher than CeeDee Lamb. I don't disagree. The talent is insane. My only question is again, sort of like we have such a small sample size of what that offense looks like with Dak Prescott, right? And so when Dak comes back, and by the way, there are pre-draft rumors that Jerry Jones is infatuated with Kyle Pitts and might trade up to get him. What is that off? I mean, like Kyle Pitts going to get fed if, you know, wherever he goes. Like I totally buy Daniel's argument that the guy is a special player. I'm not sure I'm ready to buy the fantasy role yet. You know what I mean? I'm worried that Dallas is going to be one of those teams where you want Dak Prescott, and that that at the end of the year it'll be one of the best offenses in football, but there'll be weeks where it's a Michael Gallup week, or it's a week where it's a tight end week, or it's a 3 touchdown game for Zeke week. You know, and that there'll be too many highs and lows for Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, Michael Gallup, and Ezekiel Elliott, and if they get a real tight end. Like, that's my only concern there.
Super fair. That's a, super fair argument, by the way.
You know what, though, Daniel? I'll just say this quickly. Fantasy football, like, a lot of people have a lot of the same thoughts on players, especially leading into the season, right? So I'm not saying you're going to be right or going to be wrong. And I'm not saying that we should just make picks for the sake of being right one out of 10 times. Understand the misses might also be right. But like, you know what, Daniel, if you believe it, that's fine, man. Like, it's not like you're talking about some player who can't run. Like, it's CD freaking Lamb. Like, the guy is arguably the best wide receiver prospect we've seen this year or last, arguably. I understand there are a lot of great ones. And there are amazing wide receiver prospects, right? Like, before everybody else who gets mad at me, I'm just saying it's at least a guy. He's a special, special talent. All right, let's rip through a few more here just to wrap things up with the podcast. Chase Claypool, who last year, as we know, was sort of a yo-yo player. The good was really good. He had four top 15 finishes. The bad was that he had four finishes outside the top 75. And I could live to regret this one significantly. I'm at 31, Matthew 35, Daniel 33 in our wide receiver rankings. I think the Chase Claypool breakout, and I understand some may say last year was a breakout, but I mean the breakout where he becomes this consistent wide receiver threat might be 1 year away. And part of that is influenced by the fact that he could be the third best wide receiver on his own team next year with Juju re-signing. We obviously all believe that the offense is going to look pretty comparable to how it did last year, right? Second of all, Ben Roethlisberger obviously is future Hall of Famer. All the things that you should say about Ben Roethlisberger before you say something a little bit less kind, but like Ben struggled down the stretch last year. And if that does not change going into this upcoming season, it could mean things for the wide receiver. So I think a year away, Matthew, from a major Chase Claypool breakout.
Totally agree. And by the way, it's echoes the conversation we just had about CeeDee Lamb and the Cowboys. Like, again, like there's some real talent in Pittsburgh. I mean, I think Ben at this point in his career is less than Dak, but Deontay Johnson, Juju re-signing, Chase Claypool there. Like, James Washington isn't a scrub. They like him and they use him. He's going to get a handful of targets, you know, 3 or 4 a game. And then we'll see what they do at running back as well in the draft. So Chase Claypool, likely a better NFL player this year than fantasy asset. He'll have some huge games, but I think the consistency is still probably a year away as long as Juju is still there, who signed a 1-year deal. And, as long as Ben is there, because Ben's obviously going to spread it around.
All right, let's rip through the last few just here. T. Higgins, Matthew, player that we're talking about is quarterback Joe Burrow, who, by the way, he has since deleted that Instagram post, which I'm not sure why. I thought it was actually a pretty fair game Instagram post, but that's the way social media works sometimes. T. Higgins, 12.2 fantasy points per game last year. Another player that if the Bengals don't draft the wide receiver 5th overall, then we could be talking about T. Higgins as a potential megastar going into this season.
I think he might be a megastar regardless. Like, I love T. Higgins. My fear is that I think a lot of people do, and I think he's going to be really expensive in terms of where he's going to go in terms of drafts. I'm already seeing him go fairly high up. I mean, I'm at 21, and I might be too low on him, to be perfectly honest. So we'll see what happens if they do draft Jamar Chase or not, the Bengals. But just an absolute beast. Made contested catches, ran all the routes, clearly immediately had a connection with Joe Burrow, I should say. Love T. Higgins. Love T. Higgins.
Yeah,
I was already going to hold Higgins rant about something that happened in one of our leagues. Well, I'll move on, but just whatever. T. Higgins is awesome.
Yeah, Stefania, one thing I think probably gets overlooked is that the Jaguars developed a couple of young players pretty nicely last season. One of them is Laviska Shenault Jr., their second-round pick out of Colorado, a guy who came into the NFL with some health concerns. He was a Lisfranc player, if I'm not mistaken. It's a foot injury, obviously.
He had a core muscle surgery that cost him at the combine. That's what he had coming in.
Core muscle, Lisfranc, basically the same thing. My bad on that. So a core muscle issue on Laviska, but he did not have a ton of rushing yards. But I think one thing that was pretty clear, Stefania, is he's a really talented, explosive guy.
He is, and the explosive is the key word, because I think people got a little gun shy because they didn't see it consistently in his final year playing at Colorado, but he was playing hurt. And that's when you have a core muscle injury, that's what you lose, is explosiveness. He actually went to the combine. There was some discussion about him. Maybe he shouldn't work out or participate in the combine. Tried to run, clearly could not run effectively. And so that is when they made the decision that he would undergo surgery before he then went to a team. And I think some people were worried about not only that, but a couple of other injuries that he had in college. But he is quite a specimen, a solid, strong wide receiver. And I think we've talked about this with other players, but it bears repeating, and I'll say it over and over again. These guys who are rookies came in to a COVID season with everything being virtual, no working together really in coordinated groups. And then on top of it, you have someone who's coming off a surgery and trying to get elevated to being, you know, an NFL wide receiver, and all those adjustments with those two things complicating it. I think that's why it took a while. And then it was Jacksonville, you know, so it took a while to see what we could see. But now you look at him. Again, he was another one who was strong at the end. He finished the season strong. And now you've got Trevor Lawrence coming in with him and with Urban Meyer. I'm excited to see what LaVisca Chenault can do. I think he could take a big jump this year.
All right, Matthew, one more here for the show is Jerry Jeudy, the 15th overall pick. Some people thought going into last year that he maybe would be, if drafted in the right spot, the fantasy star, the crown jewel of the rookie class. Did not have a great rookie season, but I think one thing that cannot be overlooked, Matthew, is just how much quarterback play influenced his value. If the Broncos don't draft a quarterback in the first round this year, are you concerned that this year could be a repeat or slightly better season from Jerry Jeudy, but not a breakout season?
100%. Because the other thing that you forget is that, you know, Cortland Sutton's obviously going to attract a large target share. And so maybe that helps, right? It's always one of those like, well, so now Cortland Sutton will get the number one corner and more defensive attention. And so maybe Jerry Jeudy, who is, you know, I mean, who last year, I thought he played well. He didn't have a great fantasy season, but like in terms of the route running, like Jerry Jeudy to me looked like the real deal. You know what I mean? I don't think he came into the NFL and flopped. Like, I don't think that was his lack of on-field production. I don't think it was Jerry Jeudy's fault, was my read on watching those games. Field, I don't know if you have a different take on that, but
I thought he was, you know, drops were inconsistent, obviously, and the route running was really good. You know, the route running was going to be really good, and it was. Just has to be a little bit more consistent as a player, and that also is going to happen with better quarterback play.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, better offense. I mean, like, the play calling wasn't great there, and yeah, I mean, again, like losing Cortland Sutton, who was, you know, probably going to be the focal point of their offense last year, and certainly the focal point of their passing offense, that hurts. And by the way, Noah Fant was in and out of the lineup quite a bit, or was out there like on half a hamstring. Like, so they had a lot of stuff going on there. I mean, you know, I mean, they started a practice squad wide receiver at quarterback one game. I mean, like, it was a tough year for Denver. Yeah, I mean, listen, is the talent there? It is. Look, this Saturday, he'll turn 22. Like, I think, again, he's really, really young, Jerry Jeudy. So, look, we know the talent on the upside, but there are concerns about his role with a healthy Noah Fant and Cortland Sutton in that offense. And will it still be a conservative run-first offense? And will the quarterback play improve? And so there's a lot of question marks about Jerry Jeudy. Guy that you can draft with some upside at the end of your bench. If he's on your dynasty roster, you're obviously not bailing, but hard to get excited about him at this point in the season.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what happens with the Broncos as it pertains to the quarterback position in the first round, because at pick 9, I do believe they have a chance at one of the 5 quarterbacks. It's just a matter of whether or not they love the players that will be available, if there are any, at pick 9 overall. So we're going to be back again future Tuesday. Not a lot going on in terms of the NFL news right now. Mostly we are just gearing up for the NFL draft, which, of course, will be live on ESPN Thursday, April 29th, starting, I believe, at 8 p.m. Eastern time, with, of course, some pre-draft coverage leading up until then. For Matthew and Stefania, I am Field. Find everybody on social media. Matthew Berry is at Matthew Berry TMR. All forms of social media except for the Fantasy Life app is just at Matthew Berry. And then she's Stefania underscore ESPN on Twitter and Stefania B87 on Instagram. Or did I screw that up, Stefania?
It's at Stefania Bell. I got it.
Okay, that's right. I knew there was one that you changed, but I couldn't remember which change you had made. Anyways, we're back. We'll talk to you soon. Hope everybody has a good Tuesday.
Peace out.
Turning numbers into dreams. That's what. Along with random Damien, he's in Field's group.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.